Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the South Bay Show, Preparing for Disaster in America, on September 2nd, 2014. I'm your host, Joe Terry, and the South Bay Show is brought to you by the Academy of Foreign Languages. If you have any interest in learning a new language or brushing up on existing language skills, you should know about the Academy of Foreign Languages. Located in Palos Verdes, the Academy of Foreign Languages specializes in the art of communication. Their mission is to provide the finest language instruction possible. They recognize that each student has distinctive needs and craft their teaching technique to optimize an individual's particular learning skills. At the Academy of Foreign Languages, they strive to create a comfortable environment conducive to learning. So whether you're learning a new language or would simply like to converse in your native tongue, the Academy of Foreign Languages can accommodate you. For more information, visit their website at academyofforeignlanguages.com or call 310-975-4133. That's 310-975-4133. You can find out more about us at facebook.com/The South Bay Show or visit our website at thesouthbayshow.com. Preparing for disaster in America. This is a subject that can never be treated lightly, but we do our best to make it interesting, engaging, and yes, even entertaining to learn the few key skills and primary information that could save your life, your family's lives, that of a neighbor in a time of crisis, or the life of a treasured pet. Our mission is to engage hearts and minds and build knowledge and skills in the community, yes, to prepare you for whatever may come. This show is a true collaboration with solid roots in the community and a partnership with the official Disaster Preparation Establishment. Our producer is founder and president of the local Manhattan Beach CERT Association and the Red Cross's community ambassador to Manhattan Beach, Mr. George Butts. Hey, George, how are you doing today? Hello. Hey.
Is George there?
There we are. Well, you had me mute earlier. I'm sorry.
I was going for you. I'm George Butts. I'm the real George Butts.
Yes. Anyway, it's the day after a long weekend.
And
I am fine, thank you. And go on to our co-host.
And with us today, of course, is owner-producer writer of SouthBayByJackie.com, Jackie Balestra. Hey, Jackie, how are you?
I'm doing well this morning, Joe. How are you? Good morning, George.
Good morning.
I'm better now. I'm much better now.
Okay.
And this technology that we're going to talk about today is truly amazing. It's not new, but it's great. And the application is new. I hope everyone gets to hear this show, because this is really going to be an important addition to the first responder or firefighting tool chest. Jackie, who's our guest today?
And don't forget the fashionistas. Our guest this morning is James Mosley, founder and CEO of Sunseeker and the Fire Blanket. James grew up in Kansas City, Missouri, attended UMKC Conservatory of Music, and later graduated from the University of Missouri at Columbia, attaining his PhD in political science along with his master's in music. He became one of the top salesmen at Metropolitan Life and moved on to Mass Mutual Life Insurance Company in Newport Beach and later founded the Mosley Group. In 1990, James was recognized by Ronald Reagan and the Young Entrepreneurs Organization as one of America's top 100 entrepreneurs. After selling his insurance business, James moved on to executive produce his own CD with Roger Williams and the London Symphony Orchestra, which became Grammy nominated. One of the founding members of the Crystal Cathedral Symphony Orchestra, James has performed with Frank Sinatra, Henry Mancini, Grover Washington Jr., and performed at New York Fashion Week. In 2004, Jim entered the fashion industry by co-founding Creative Concepts, a.k.a. Captain Leather Bubble Designs, a patented product used for apparel, accessories, and furnishings. Jim was CEO of Bubble Leather from 2004 to 2009, and after selling his stake in the company, he began working with SAFE, which is Strategically Armored and Fortified Environments. In 2011, James introduced the fire blanket to SAFE and demonstrated the blanket's inability to burn. After successfully introducing the blanket, James was promoted to marketing director. He founded Sunseeker Enterprises in 2012 to pursue applications for commercial, residential, and marine environments. In addition, James is a smile ambassador for Operation Smile, doctors that fix cleft lips and palates on children. Welcome to the program, James. We are so glad you could join us this morning.
Well, it's great to be up and, you know, talking to, you know, people who care about what's happening in America. So
it's what an incredible career you've had, James. I mean, music and political science and now inventor. We can add inventor to your list of credits. Give us.
Oh yeah, and by the way, single dad too. Okay, for the most part, I've been a single dad most of these years. So
okay,
you know, that's taken a lot of ingenuity along the way as well.
Yes, and a very creative aspect of life too. So
absolutely.
Where did this, the Sunseeker, come from?
All right. Well, you know, it was really interesting. You know, the Sunseeker came before the fireball blanket, all right? Mm-hmm. You know, one day I saw a really beautiful boat yacht, and I said, you know, wow, God, look at the lines on that. Just beautiful. I appreciate, you know, good things coming from fashion, whatever. And I saw it was a Sunseeker yacht. I said, someday I want to have one of those. And so it just kind of laid there for a while as a corporation. And, you know, and all of a sudden, it's interesting, that the cart came before the horse, definitely. You know, out of the blue, I had ended up taking a tour, you know, from a good friend of mine who worked at an aerospace company. And he had, you know, it was showing me, you know, they had like $13.5 million machines cranking out titanium parts for B-2 bombers and stealth jets and all this sort of stuff. And then they had shown me all of these tiles that were off the space shuttle. And those were $1,500 a square foot. And the next came the, you know, the fire blanket, which was $5 a square foot. And I basically said, what are you doing with that, you know? And they said, well, not a whole lot. You know, it's really not our core business after the shuttle missions ended. And, you know, we still do odds and ends with it and put it in, you know, cockpits and protect certain areas of, you know, other aerospace type stuff. And and so I basically, you know, just took it around. And I took it, one of my first stops was with the World Trade Center architects, Skidmore, Owens, and Merrill. And anyway, they were pretty blown away by it. And, you know, within the same month, something very interestingly magical happened. And a buddy of mine called me from back in Philadelphia. And he says, there's a buddy of mine who's hunting on my property. And I'm like, hunting? He says, yeah, he'd really love to see the, you know, see the video that you had sent me. Can I show him? I said, show whoever you want. And the video basically was me holding this blanket, all right? Mm-hmm. It was a half-inch of blanket in my hand, and I had a blowtorch on it, okay, a 3,000-degree blowtorch on it. And this guy was so blown away. And this guy, by the way, his name's William Jimeno. And Will, if you haven't heard of him, you probably know who he is anyway. He was one of the survivors, a New York Port Authority police officer, survivor of the World Trade Center. When the World Trade Center actually collapsed, it was him and only his chief, played by Nicolas Cage in the movie, okay, that survived the 100-story building on them for 13 and a half hours. And so next thing you know, I'm on the phone with this guy. I went out to rent the movie. It took a lot of confront. I actually knew, you know, a couple of people that were in it. in the World Trade Center. One survived, one didn't. And I couldn't believe it, you know, when I actually saw the movie. And so Will said something very interesting. He said, you know, if we'd have just had these beams in the old World Trade Center wrapped in this blanket, the inner beams, he said, you know, actually what happened is once the beams reached 2,000 degrees, so the oxygen inside the concrete actually starts to explode, you know, and then it causes the steel to fail. And oh my gosh, he said, yeah, this could have bought us an extra hour or two, you know, which who knows, it could have got everybody out. And he said it that confidently, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, basically I didn't know a lot about the material or anything else. And so I went, I had my big meeting with the World Trade Center architects in Orleans, in Maryland. And here I'm sitting there with these brilliant architects, you know, constructed the tallest building in Dubai. I mean, you name it, hundreds of thousands of monumental structures around the world. And at the end of the day, you know, they went back and forth with all their, you know, technical jargon and everything else. And I took a lot of notes, and they said, you know, all I knew is I had a guy who was trapped under there for 13 and a half hours who told me if these beams are wrapped, this is what could have happened. Okay. The outcome have been a lot different. So,
James, let me break this down for the audience. I want to make it easy and simple for people to understand. The fire blanket is a result of NASA technology, but it's really very simple. It's a ceramic fabric.
It's a ceramic type fire blanket. Okay.
Yeah.
And it has other components in it, like things like zirconia and silica and stuff like this. And
okay.
A ceramic fiber blanket, okay,
right.
is actually 80% air. It's
right.
A woven, you know, amazingly woven piece that, you know, just keeps creating a further and further firewall. It's more, you know, as you get deeper and deeper until you really don't feel a lot on the other side, just to break it down really simply. And all I did was take a simple blanket. Unfortunately, you couldn't just take the blanket and wrap a beam with it, okay? It would fall off. It would eventually come apart. So it's what I did with the ceramic fiber blanket that made it unique, okay? And combined it with some other things, okay, that were... That allowed it to be, you know, have a lot of strength, what we call tensile strength,
right.
Okay? And then I create some things to keep it on there. And so that's how the development of that started. And
but it can also be used as a fire blanket for fire personnel that are fighting forest fires?
Exactly, yeah. What happens, I was really knee-deep in, you know, working and developing stuff with the World Trade Center architects on this for commercial purposes. And what ended up happening was I took it to the chief of Los Angeles, and he was pretty impressed with it, turned me on to the chairman of equipment development, I had a whole idea of mainly just protecting structures. I had no idea what a fire shelter was for firefighters.
Mm-hmm.
And what ended up happening was I did a pretty interesting, you know, flamboyant demonstration. I had a piece of the fire blanket underneath a fireman's turnout jacket in my sleeve, and I put a blowtorch on it. And, of course, it burned right through their sleeve in a second, and they were just in shock, and I just held it on my arm. And so at that point, they were just, you know, dumbfounded at the whole thing. And they said, you know, what we could really use it for is one of these. So they pulled out one of these aluminum foil shelters. And that's really exactly what it is. It's not exactly aluminum foil. It's a Mylar type texture, which looks like foil. And the one that they have now is backed by a fiberglass backing. It's basically glued to a fiberglass backing, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And so It works really well if the fire is less than 1,000 degrees. And it works real well if that fire passes within a minute, okay?
Right.
And the firefighters use it in a what they call a blowback situation, where it's where that fire is rushing towards them. They can't outrun it. They can't get to their safety zone. Like at Yarnell, the fire was moving at 100 yards per 19 seconds, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So if you have to ditch your equipment and then you run and you're getting to your safety zone and there ain't no safety zone because there's another fire coming the other way, which would happen at Yarnell and caught them into a fishbowl, then they're in, they have to shake this thing open. They pull it out of a little bag and they shake it open and get under it. They put their feet in one skin, and they put their hands in the other, and they hold it over themselves and pray like, you know, the plague. So basically, all we were really shooting for, so by the way, at that time, there was no Yarnell that occurred, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I took it to the Department of Forestry because the firefighters introduced me to one of the directors. And at that point, we really hadn't been anything like this occur yet, okay? And they weren't in any hurry to, you know, get a better fire shelter. You know, their point of view is, look, you know, you shouldn't have got caught in that situation in the first place. You should have, you know, prepared, you know, better, you know, to get out of the situation, not be trapped under it. Okay. I mean, tell that to anybody that's been, you know, had their neighbor killed in a tornado, okay? I mean, you just don't know all the things that happen in life, you know, and the turns that things are going to take. So anyway, that's kind of what happened. So then fast forward, Yarnell came around, and about 3 weeks later, you know, I got a call, and it was from the same director, and this guy was also one of the lead investigators at the Yarnell fire, you know? So he was really, you know, knee-deep and understanding, you know, what happened. And he said, well, now we're very interested, obviously. And you know, he didn't, it's nothing he took lightly. And it's, you know, again, you know, you have these tragedies occur, and it definitely steps up things. It's like the lightning strike we had a month ago and, you know, here in Venice Beach, you know, with no warning whatsoever, you know, and it shakes you out of your skull and two people die.
Right.
So one person at least, I think, died. So
right.
So anyway, that's tragedy in the way it comes. So bottom line is the only issue was that I had really spent all my money, you know, developing, you know, applications for building by this time since they weren't interested before.
Mm-hmm.
So getting, you know, just because it works up ace, okay, George, or Joe, doesn't make it necessarily work. You know, you have to get it approved down here on Earth, all right? So I went about getting UL approvals for it in different areas, floors, walls, ceilings, roofing. You put this over the plywood on your roof, and you had burning embers that land on your roof on shingles that aren't supposed to burn and tiles that don't burn. It's still, you know, transfer enough heat to torch the plywood and burn down your house. You put this over the plywood, and you could have a burning tree in your home all night long. It'll never transfer enough heat to burn down your house.
Now,
okay?
I want to take a break here and get people caught up a little bit. I mean, you first started with structures. You had one of the World Trade Center survivors from the Port Authority say, if we'd wrapped our columns in this blanket material, we might have had more time to get more people out. So that business is developing, and then it just is, it's a fluke that you found out that firefighters in the trenches in let's say forest fires and other kinds of wildfires have these blankets that they carry with them that are supposed to get them through a tough situation, but they're only good to 500 degrees, but you've got something that's good to 3,000 degrees that could have saved lives. And
yes.
and people are starting to find out about it. That's why we're here on the South Bay Show. Let me take a station break, James, and do a little business. Ladies and gentlemen, you're talking to the South Bay Show, or you're listening to the South Bay Show, and we are talking with James Mosley about the fire blanket and all technologies related to it. And we'll be right back in a moment with that. But we want to make sure that if you want to call in and ask a question, please give us a call at 714-242-5288. That's 714-242-5288. We'd love to have your comment or question. And also, we need to thank a sponsor. We got to thank somebody. Jackie, who do we want to thank?
Well, Joe, you know it's never too early to begin planning your financial future. When it comes to protecting your assets and hard-earned dollars, you'll want experienced professionals with a proven track record and flawless reputation on your team. Briganti, Cameron, Waters & Strong, certified public accountants and consultants, is the largest full-service accounting firm in the South Bay, and they are dedicated to providing professional services of the highest quality. The partners are South Bay residents deeply committed to serving the communities where they live, work, and play. They support a variety of local nonprofit organizations such as Skate Park PV, Palos Verdes Peninsula Land Conservancy, the Torrance South Bay YMCA, Rotary, and Pediatric Therapy Network, among others. BCWS prides itself on providing national accounting technical experience with the personal attention of a local company. This commitment to uphold high standards of excellence has proven key to their success and first-rate reputation. Their ultimate goal and reward is to see their clients achieve financial success as they define it, whether that means helping them to reduce their tax burden, assisting them with planning to ensure their financial security, succession planning, exit strategies, and wealth transfer. The partners and professionals of BCWS are committed to providing their clients with the expertise and guidance they need to reach their financial goals. For more information, visit the website at www.bcws.com or call 310-542-0011.
All right. So now our financial future is prepared, James, but what we really want to know is, this fire blanket is revolutionary.
Yeah, you know, let me describe the revolution. You know, it's it's been in aerospace for 30 years, but you know, it's been used in a very specific way. So I didn't reinvent any wheel. I just, you know, it's kind of like taking a regular engine and figuring out how to turbocharge it, you know, and you know, do other things with it. So really, what I had done is, you know, I said, okay, well, you can't just lay it on a roof. It needs to be able to do something that allows it to stay there, okay, during weathering and everything else. And the other thing is, well, what happens when you do a, you know, when you have a situation of driving a nail through it? Okay, well, the nail's going to transfer enough heat to torch the plywood, too. Mm-hmm. So we were able to come up with a way where you can drive a nail literally through the asphalt shingle, through the blanket, to the plywood, torch the nail to a fender, and lift up the blanket, and the wood's fine. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's the revolutionary part. Okay. The revolutionary part is I was able to create a 3,000-degree Velcro to hold protection in place. Those are some of the types of things that we were able to come up with that were, you know, that made it very, very effective. So, anyway, those are some of the things that we were able to do with it. Now, when it came to the actual fire shelter, okay, mm-hmm. With firefighters, it wasn't, you know, so genius. It was just a matter of adding it in. Mm-hmm. But then the only issue, you know, it's nothing is just simple, okay? You don't just sew a blanket in. The problem with this blanket, you can't even really regularly sew it, okay? It takes a very speed, but just if you put this to a sewing machine, any type of regular sewing machine, it would just chop it up. Okay, so that's what you'd be looking at with the ceramic fiber blanket. Mm-hmm. So we came up with new techniques to be able to keep it together, and we have a 3,000-degree thread that you can hold a blowtorch on and It's just, you know, lights up, you know, glows and still stays in place. So anyway, those are some of the elements that we're able to do with it. Then something that really kind of came out of the blue that was a an amazing thing is I think you might have seen the links where really the firefighters, their issue was as soon as the fire, you know, you get over 2,000 degrees and the fire burns right through that foil, you know, that they have. And, you know, we came up with a spray that you can spray the foil and you can hold a nearly 3,000 degree blowtorch on it for minutes, literally, and nothing happens. It doesn't turn black, nothing. So what we've done is we've combined that. We've combined the spray to protect the outer layer. We then incorporated the blanket. And then you have a whole other stage of it, okay? Firefighters, you get two different types of firefighters out there, okay? You got the fearless guys that go, well, if I didn't, we'd rather not have to carry anything, okay? Which, you know, it was their own mistakes that, you know, caused them this. And they, you know, they should have gotten out, they should have known where their safety zones were. They should, you got, you know, the devil's advocate playing that they shouldn't be, you know, they'd rather not wear anything like the old days, okay? But then, you know, 19 guys all die under their fire shelters at once. Kind of changes that point of view, right? Because they weren't all dumb. You know, these were well-prepared hot shots that are, you know, trained daily for these situations that, you know, knew their stuff, you know, and got overcome. Now, if you're one of those guys, okay, and you're thoroughly trained, and you know, though, if the fertilizer hits the ventilator and there's no way out, you got to get under a shelter that protects you up to maybe 1,000 degrees in a 2,000 degree fire, there's an issue. There's a real problem, you know. They're not going to have any confidence. And this is some of the inner stuff that most people don't hear, okay? I've had firefighters say that it survived, okay, a fire shelter, that they said there's guys that have actually just stood up. It got so hot. And all they wanted to do was just, they got so tempted, and something would, that they would just stand up and take a quick gulp of air, and that would kill them instantly rather than survive a fire shelter for another minute or two. That's how hot it gets, all right? So, you know, me, I every time I demonstrated with a blowtorch in my hand. You know, we do very close simulations of what it has. I have two of the top Hollywood stunt guys. One did the Expendables and deals with fire every day for the last 30 years from Backdraft, the movie on. Said, I'll go under this, you know, for 3 minutes, 4 minutes. And all they're looking for, really, these fires usually pass within two. And, you know, if we have that kind of confidence, you know, from a firefighter, then, you know, at least, you know, that gives them that. They don't deserve to die protecting somebody else's property, okay? So we got to give them the very best. There's no way to slide that at all.
I agree. We need to give them the very best. And so how do we get this into the hands of firefighters? What are the processes that you're going through right now to get it deployed?
Well, the good news, you know, bad news, I'd spend a lot of money on the other avenues of applications with UL stuff. But the good news is when the forestry reached out to me, they turned me on to their director of their testing facility up in Alberta, Canada. We were able to you know, do a lot of testing, and the testing, you know, we just sailed through the testing. But there's a lot of levels of testing, okay? So just because the fire blanket works and just because the, you know, the spray works, you know, well, it has to be repacked in a different way, okay? It doesn't just sit in some little bag and pulled out like an aluminum, you know, like your aluminum foil in your kitchen, all right? Picture just a big block of that, and that's what they were pulling out of a little bag. So now we have all the extra, now we have to be able to pack it. So I got really a premier guy, you know, in the nation that just, that does this type of stuff, you know, without going into details of who he is. But, you know, he's really a pioneer in this type of thing, repackaging. And then my cousin works at JPL, so on the Mars project. He's worked on it since its inception. Mm-hmm. So then we're working on a better deployment system.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the real expense is going to be coming in, because in a good condition, these guys are able to pull the current one out of a bag and shake it open, and they're going to get it open in high winds, hopefully, between 20 and 30 seconds, all right?
Okay.
And, by the way, another thing you don't read about, and you can't blame the shelter on, is that, you know, I've literally seen the films, the fire departments, where the body is found, the body of the firefighter is found 150 feet away from the shelter because they couldn't keep it on. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I actually heard a story where firefighters have been completely horizontal hanging onto a fire hose for stability. Okay. So that gives you an idea where these gale force winds can come into play, you know, that are, you know, that come with the fires. So it's not just the fires. So, with the deployment system I'm working on, they'll have it open in 3 seconds. And then they'll hold it down traditionally, the way they do it already. Mm-hmm. So, and then we're working on oxygen, you know, during that time, because the fire, you know, sucks out the oxygen. So, you know, if they're really going to be in there that extra time, okay, so what if we've protected them for 5 minutes under a fire? They can't hold their breath that long, and there's no oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fire just decided to sit on them for 5 minutes, which it won't, but... you know, when you're panicking, it's like scuba diving. You know, what normally would take you a minute to breathe in a panic situation, you go through that same amount of oxygen in 10 seconds, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So unless you're some type of Zen master, so they can regulate your breathing. So nobody, I haven't met anyone like that yet. So anyway, those are some of the considerations that go through this. And so, you know, there's more testing, but we're always thinking ahead, and, you know, we've been able to learn from mistakes in the past of things that didn't work.
Right.
And, you know, we're just taking one day at a time and getting a clearer picture and a better product. So, yeah.
Well, that's fabulous. I mean, different kinds of or different grades of the product that you're looking to develop, commercial grade up to 1400 degrees Fahrenheit, and then the zirconia grade up to 2400 degrees Fahrenheit, or effectively 3000 degrees. When this is deployed, will it be affordable for fire agencies and county governments to afford?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we're talking an extra couple $100 to save a life, you know, to make this happen. If they go for the deployment system, maybe another $300. But, you know, it has a 30% survival rate right now is what I'm told, okay, and what I've read. So if we could boost that to 90, you know, I think, what's that worse?
Amen.
You know, 300.
That's all.
James, sorry, guy.
Yeah.
George here.
Hi, George. As I'm
listening, also you're also doing this for roofs. Also, this is something that could be incorporated for just the general public, that somebody would live out in an area, you know, where, you know, most of our fires end up building homes. But I wanted to back up because I heard this morning at the Fire Academy up. Near Dodger Stadium today, hundreds of LA County or LA City firefighters are up there working on a Mayday call, which is a firefighter in distress or trapped.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as I heard that this morning, I thought, wow, all right, the show, you know, how come you're on our show this morning? You should be down there having this conversation with the firemen. But, you know, we in Manhattan Beach send our firefighters out on a regular basis in strike teams, and Some of our battalion chiefs will head up a strike team. A battalion chief, five engines, will run from the South Bay all over the state of California. And something like this to be able, you know, to provide them additional safety and equipment is something that certainly needs to be looked at and looked into much deeper and further than they have now.
Yeah, you know, there's a few quick applications here. So, the weakest link in the in a fire truck, okay, is the windshields, okay? As soon as the fire, the radiant heat blows the windshields, the firefighters might as well, that's it, all right? So we've developed the same type of technology, for curtains inside of a fire truck. And there's some that are out there that are 4 or 5 inches thick, but we can do it with a half inch, okay? So it literally just comes down like a shade. You could put your hand on the other side of it while roaring fire is going past the truck, right? So what the firefighters are doing for the most part now is they're throwing their fire shelters up against the windshield. And, again, it's the same amount of protection, okay? And it's some protection, but it's not this protection. So I think one of you was starting to venture on, so you got the commercial grade for firefighters, structures. Yes, we got the roofing components where it will stop burning embers. One thing I want to let you know is this. I'm going to give you a couple of little interesting statistics here. I worked very heavily in Colorado Springs after their two biggest fires in Colorado history a couple of years ago. And interestingly enough, I did an HBA, a home builders show, right afterwards, okay? And it was open free, for people who lost their homes during the fire. The first one took 347 homes. I'm not sure how many the second fire took. But those homes, for the most part, all had A-rated shingles, all had tiles that don't burn. And when you say A-rated shingles, it's not supposed to burn, okay? And most of them don't burn, all right?
Mm-hmm.
So now burning embers are such a concern, landing on top of an A-rated shingle or a tile. And 99% of the homes that burned to the ground had those. There was only a few shake roofs that burned. Of course they burned, in the middle of the forest. The rest of them were nice new track homes that burned to the ground. So this is happening. It's a blind spot. This is happening because the fire is getting so hot on top of the roofs that it's transferring heat through to the plywood, past the cell, and then torching the house and burning it down. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So just by putting this amount of protection over the plywood, underneath the felt, and the underneath the asphalt shingle, that gives you that layer of protection of. And you don't have to stay on top of your roof, and inhale smoke and with a garden hose, which people do, which isn't safe either, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, and with the sprays, we can get up underneath the eaves and everything else with our 3,000-degree spray. Our spray is a game changer. What they have now is you have a gel and maybe a foam. And the fire department or a couple of agencies can go out right before a fire and put this gel or this foam on the house, and then the fire, it'll protect the home and that fire. But how many of those homes can you get to, right? So we have a clear matted finish spray that's invisible, literally, on a stucco house, a wood house, anything, it's invisible. And you can put that on any time of the year, and it dries in about an hour, and it's going to protect whatever spray. I mean, if it'll protect the foil on a fire shelter at 3,000 degrees with a blowtorch, it will protect the stucco and the wood, all right? So that's what we have for homes. This is what I consider revolutionary. Not that I came up with another genius, product. I just took a product, enhanced the product, and it works.
I absolutely consider that revolutionary because you're now saying that you can retrofit homes to make them fire safe.
Yeah, with the blanket, it's retrofit. If you wanted to get it inside your walls, if you want to put it on your roof, you know, underneath the and by the way, the blanket is also a very good insulator as well. It has good R value, day-to-day insulation value to keep your home cooler in the summer, warmer in the winter, all right? So your typical insulations will burn. You know, they are flammable in most cases. If you get a fire and you get a bunch of insulation in your attic, yeah, it'll keep it cool, but if there's a fire, it'll burn. So, you know, we have a way to even encase the insulation with this stuff, you know, and just lay this down where the fire, it's just going to smother it. And it won't catch fire, the insulation. So you're talking an insulation, you know, slash fire stop for your home, which is, again, another revolutionary thing. You only get one or the other usually, all right? And then we're even testing because we found it has great sound suppression. So we're even testing, you know, the amount of sound dampering that it has, you know, from room to room. So we installed it in a recording studio. They said, why can't we just use this? This works just as well. So then we got the fire, and then we're also doing the sound insulation, you know, for a studio. We did some fire curtains, you know, around a home theater system. We did a car cover, you know, for a $500,000 Testarossa, so Ferrari. So you could have a flamethrower on that car cover for 15 minutes, and it would never damage the paint job on the $500,000 Ferrari.
Now, that's a tremendously varied set of markets that would be difficult to approach all at once.
Well, and that's why I tried to...
I want to know who volunteered their Testarossa for this test.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I can't give out his name, you know, because I didn't get to him quick enough to ask him. But, he's a very influential person that's doing a lot of good in home protection, okay, and major estates and stuff like that. So
it's the rollout of this technology of ceramic fiber technology into so many different areas. It's really a beautiful thing to see this deployment.
Yeah, it works well, and all it needed was a few, you know, other touches. It needed to be water, you know, water resistant, waterproof, and I've been able to do that. So if it's up on your roof for any amount of time, it's not just going to eat it away, you know, eventually. You know, it's fortified in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
We even have done it in a major home in another area of Colorado where they have one-inch hail that hits the roof. So we've been able to create a protection layer for the actual fiber blanket. So here you got a home that gets hit by baseball-sized hail every so often, and then the homeowner has been evacuated twice in the last 4 years because of fires. So we've really had to... you know, step up everything that we do to make sure, okay, so what? What if the hail damages the ceramic fiber blanket? So then it's no good if the fire comes. So, you know, there's all these things you have to think of with it. But we try to keep really, you know, I shifted 90% of my focus onto the firefighters when Yarnell happened, just because, you know, life is more important than property. You keep it in the proper perspective and order. Someone's risking their lives to protect property. They come first, okay? Then anything else is, a secondary application to me. I've talked to several parents who lost their kids at Yarnell. I never reached out to them. I wouldn't dream of reaching out and saying we have something that could have saved your son, but they kind of sought me out. They found me and said, hey, good job. A couple of them even donated to what I'm doing, and because it's been on my own dime and some firefighters that have been helping support what I'm doing. And a couple of other investors, you know, just said, here, take this and make it work. So, you know, that's basically how it's gone. You're right. You know, you cannot get too far left or right. You know, when we decided to do a Testarossa, wasn't we were trying to get in that business. It was because the guy had a very important car he wanted to protect and said, here, I'll pay you a big amount of money, and that kind of helped keep us in business during the time when we're doing our core business. You know? You know, we're not going to turn it down. But I tell you this much, with the fires in Colorado Springs, I saw every home that burned to the ground. I toured every square block, that burned to the ground. And if we'd had that fire blanket and the sprays, you know, it wouldn't have been 347 homes that burned to the ground. It would have been, I would have ventured, less than 10, all right? You wouldn't have wiped out city blocks. Because you had, typically, you had trees that were planted right next to the house, right in the back of the house. People moved to those areas because they want to be close to nature in the woods. Now they're going, okay, well, now you have to have trees this far away from your house. Well, why? Okay, because it's, because nobody has a better solution. That's why.
James, you know who you need to talk to? You need to talk to the insurance companies. You know, because the insurance companies are the people that end up paying out all the money when this is, the insurance companies have a vested interest in this.
You know, I ran it from the top State Farm guy in Colorado Springs. He took it up to corporate and just sat there. And, you know, I'm sorry, I shouldn't have mentioned that. But anyway, it just sat there at the corporate level, hasn't gone anywhere, you know, and they spent $300 million in claims. And, you know, Allstate the same way, just deaf ears. And I'm like, you know, sooner or later, okay, now I can spend a couple of million dollars, you know, lobbying it in Washington, so eventually it trickles down, you know, to the decision makers and the insurance companies. But you're absolutely right. The spray will circumvent that in a second. You know, we'll cut down on their, you know, their claims tremendously. You know, I mean, if they just offer a 15-20% discount on the insurance on it, and you get enough people yapping that they want that, then I think it'll eventually happen. But that's a long-term plan, I think.
Hey, James, we want to make sure that everyone has contact information so they can find out more about the Sunseeker Fire Blanket and all the technologies related. Sunseekerfireblanket.com, sunseekerfireblanket.com is one way to get in touch with you. But do you have other ways, James?
Yeah, you know, and we're doing We Survive right now on the, for the firefighter because of donations that people are helping, okay? So if you go to Sunseeker Fire Blanket, if you go to GoFundMe, you'll see that actual site where you can go to donate. And our goal is $150,000, which isn't a lot to save future firefighters' lives. So far, you know, we've raised $13,000 towards that, okay? So if you guys could, you know, anybody, the listener, could be so compelled, you know, to donate $20, $50, $100 or whatever. We have nice gifts and exchanges that are typical within the crowdfunding site, but that would really help us. And then just last but not least, there's a phone number that you can reach us at 818-486-4662. And we're always looking for that angel that wants to, you know, help expedite this whole process, because you can have all the new technology in the world, but it takes people and funding to really drive it. And the payoff will be in lives, properties, and, you know, the enhancement of our world, and that's what we're trying to do here, protect America from disaster.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, James Mosley from SunseekerFireBlanket.com. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, too. I really enjoyed being on your show. Thanks.
Thank you. And, George, did you have some announcements that you wanted to make about future shows?
No, not yet.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm still working on next week.
Just tune in next Tuesday at 7 a.m. Pacific, ladies and gentlemen, for the latest in disaster preparation for America. And thank you, Jackie.
Always a pleasure, Jeff.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you on Thursday. And then, of course, on Friday at 8 a.m., Thursday at 7, and Friday at 8 a.m. We'll see you all. Thank you for joining us. Bye-bye now.